And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I want to wish every mother on the planet Happy Mother's Day. You deserve you deserve to be honored. It's an amazing thing. That's probably one of the hardest jobs of all time, being a mom. And so you're doing great. Keep up the good work. I am truly fascinated by what goes on within the gut. It is just utterly amazing how it can regulate and control literally the rest of the body. So I came across this brief bit of information, and the lady's name is Annalise Schoeneck, and I think it comes from a French translation. Okay, which some of the most interesting books I've read, they originally started out from French. I mean, from the French language. I know there's a difference when you translate it from French to English. So let us begin. Oui, oui. Okay, she goes on to write, there is often a tendency to look for exterior infectious agents as the cause of illness. What she's saying is, when we get sick, we want to blame it on something from the outside, like a toxic germ or a bacteria. Well, she goes on to write that what we forget is the intestine that is functioning poorly. That's what leads to serious consequences for the entire whole body. That is why, since most ancient times, lactic acid was used to clean or cleanse the intestines. Need to put this on a hold because I'm fixing to read an article from Science Magazine to you. Different types of lacto-fermented juices were used as preferred remedies against typhus or typhoid and other types of illnesses. The most recent research has confirmed this beneficial action of lactic acid-producing bacteria. Now, when I say lactic acid-producing bacteria, one example would be pickles or sauerkraut, or if you had yogurt. If it has a sour flavor or taste to it, there you go. That's lactic acid. The mucous membranes of the intestinal tract are protected by bacteria, which create an acid environment in which the pathogenic bacteria cannot multiply. Do you get that? When you have plenty of lactic acid-producing bacteria that naturally do you a favor by protecting all the mucous linings, that means the toxic germs, they don't have a place to live. Okay? You're probably thinking to yourself right now, I wonder if I can replicate that in myself and then produce much better health than what I have right now. And the answer is yes. The whole digestive tract harbors a complex bacteriological flora that varies from one part to the next. The lactic acid-producing bacteria are characterized by the fact that they survive the transition from the stomach to the small intestine. See, they're not destroyed by the strong digestive juices such as hydrochloric acid or pepsin. They live. God designed them that way. And eventually, they're still active when they reach your large intestine or your colon. Research has shown that lactic acid-producing bacteria can prevent the growth of coliform bacteria and agents of cholera from establishing themselves in the intestines. That means when you have enough lactic acid-producing bacteria, you don't get the toxic germs. They have no ability to grow in your colon. And you thought it was because of deficiency of antibiotics. No. Even certain carcinogenic substances, that means cancer-causing, they're inhibited and altogether inactivated by these good, beneficial bacteria. In effect, the state of our intestinal flora contributes not only to the absorption of nutrients and to the functioning of the intestine, but also our abilities to resist infection. You know, I kind of wonder, I think that came from like the 1960s. I can't prove it because I didn't look it up, but that's what I think. Okay. This last week, I was on a walk in the evening. I don't know what time it was. I'm going to say 7:45, maybe 8 o'clock. And I heard a barking of a dog that sounded like it was in trouble, and it was across the loop there in Tyler, you know, Loop 49. So I was up on a hill on one side of the loop, and I heard this dog kind of bark and cry out like there was trouble. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go over there and see what's going on. And so you know how you hear something and you try to triangulate exactly where the position of the animal was or the sound that you heard. And I started moving toward it. Well, you know, it takes a while to go up and down hills and crevices and go through ditches and weeds and vines and the black, well, they're not blackberries, they're dewberries. They are everywhere. If you want to go get some free food today, the dewberries, they're ready to be picked. If you had a 5-gallon bucket, I think you could probably fill it up if you had enough people pitching in to pull them. They're everywhere. So as I made it over there, I kind of cut through the woods. You know how when you go through the woods where it hadn't been trimmed up, there's briars and brambles everywhere, and there's thorns and thistles and branches and weeds and bull nettle, and there's milk thistle growing like crazy everywhere. I think it's kind of pretty in a way. And so when I came up on where I thought the dog was, well, there was no dog to be seen, but I came across this super, super old cemetery. And this cemetery, I was just amazed as I walked through it. There were gravestone markers of so many children that were born back in the 1800s. And as you'd look on the headstones, you'd see this person was born in 1803. And they were buried in 1804. Well, I don't remember the last time that I went through a cemetery and I saw so many children that had passed away before they were even out of being a toddler. I mean, just so many of them. And actually, I want to say in one family, there were either two or three children that were buried, you know, back to back to back, year after year. They just didn't survive their childhood. Well, just because we don't have it now, there were things called typhus outbreak or typhoid. There's also like a massive problem with cholera. And I kind of thought to myself, you know what? We don't understand now what we understand, or they didn't understand then what we understand now. People didn't have running water, and they didn't have the practice of washing their hands with soap to clean them. So if a doctor had just done an autopsy on a body and didn't think of washing his hands and went and helped deliver a baby, well, to me, duh, it's no big mystery why the kid gets sick or the baby's got a massive infection problem along with the mama just because the doctor had dirty germ-infested hands. Now, we're going to switch gears here. This was published this week on May the 5th, so that was day before yesterday. It comes from Science Magazine. And just listen to the title of this. It says recurrent UTIs, that's just short for urinary tract infections. I would imagine at this point, this is mainly a female topic. Now, I do see men with chronic kidney infections or bladder infections or prostate infections, and it's the same information. But specifically, this is probably going to be more useful for the hearing of women that really battle this. And the thing of it is, I feel so sorry for women that have this repeated problem over and over again. But the title of the article is Recurrent Urinary Tract Infections, They Are Linked to Gut Microbiome and Chronic Inflammation. Okay? That's the title of the article. And you ask me, what's the gut microbiome? Well, it's the complex diversity of all the microbes that live inside of your body. Actually, you probably have 10 bacteria living inside of you for every cell that makes up your body. One of the simple issues is straightforward. Bacteria are a whole lot smaller than what your cells are. Okay? Here's the article. One of the greatest frustrations regarding urinary tract infections is that they so often recur. And if you're one of those women that's had recurrent UTIs, then you could say, yes, I can vouch for that. UTIs are caused by bacteria in the urinary tract and characterized by frequent and painful urination. I do want to interject that 60% of all women that have a urinary tract infection, they don't even know it. One of the ways to ensure that a woman is going to get kind of loopy in her thinking and not have a clear mind is to have a UTI. There is a correlation. And actually, the correlation is so interesting that what goes on in your gut is going to influence your brain function and your neurology and how you think and neurotransmitter production. It's just astounding. And so when a woman has a painful urinary tract infection, what does the doctor give her? A round of antibiotics. And what does that do? Well, for the most part, it probably clears up the symptoms that she has. But the point is, relief is usually temporary. The article goes on to say that a quarter of all women who develop a urinary tract infection, they're given antibiotics. Well, guess what they get? They get a second UTI within 6 months. Some unfortunate women or individuals, they get these UTIs over and over and over again. And so they sort of just live on antibiotics. And to me, I don't like that plan either, because study after study shows the more antibiotics that you have in your lifetime, the greater the lifetime risk you have of developing cancer. And so you're asking me the question, are you saying that antibiotics actually weaken the immune system? Yeah. So listen to this right here. Researchers at the Washington University School of Medicine, St. Louis, and the Broad Institute of MIT, which I think is Massachusetts Institute of Technology, that's where the smart people go, and Harvard University, they all collaborated, and they showed that a round of antibiotics, well, they eliminate disease-causing bacteria from the bladder, but they don't do anything to remove the toxic UTI-causing infection from the colon or from your gut or your intestines. So basically, the surviving bacteria in the gut, they can just keep multiplying, and the, guess where they spread to? They spread to the bladder all over again, causing another UTI. At the same time, repeated cycles of antibiotics, they wreak havoc on the community of the helpful bacteria that normally live in the intestines, and this is what you call your gut microbiome. What you're supposed to have is a whole bunch of good, friendly, beneficial bacteria. And you know what? For the most part, when you have plenty of good, healthy bacteria, you got a really healthy gut. You're not complaining of UTIs. You don't complain of infections. Your bowels are in pretty good shape. So that's kind of a clue to you that if you have continual inflammation and pain from your gut, you might have an issue with your gut microbiome. It may not be as strong and radiant as you'd like. Okay, women with recurrent UTIs, in this study, they had a much less diverse microbiome. Does that make sense? And they were deficient in an important group of bacteria that helps regulate inflammation. And a distinct immunological signature in their blood indicative of inflammation. Let me translate that for you. When you don't have enough good beneficial bacteria that live inside of your gut, you're going to have more inflammation of the blood. You know how it says in the book of Leviticus that the life is in the blood? I think there may be something to this. So if you have fewer beneficial microbes, guess what you're going to have? More inflammation. Okay? Okay. This study was published in May, on May the 2nd in a journal called Nature Microbiology. And I'm quoting a doctor here. It's frustrating for women who are coming to the doctor with recurrence after recurrence, and the doctor, who's typically male, they start to give them advice about hygiene, said co-senior author Scott Hultgren, Ph.D., and Helen L. Stoever, professor of molecular microbiology at Washington University. That's not necessarily what the problem is. It's not necessarily poor hygiene that's causing this. The problem lies in the disease itself, in this connection between the gut and the bladder and the levels of inflammation. And so what did I say just a while ago about inflammation? You're going to have it if you don't have enough beneficial microbes. So the wheels in your mind or your brain are starting to turn right now, and you're starting to say, okay, what do we do to help improve that situation? The issue is, basically, physicians don't know what to do with recurrent UTIs. If all they have is antibiotics, guess what you're going to get if you show up to the doctor's office with a UTI? They're just going to throw more antibiotics at the problem, which probably is going to make things worse, because like I told you from the study earlier, it doesn't do anything to wipe out the toxic germ that's growing inside of your gut. So you can take an antibiotic, get rid of the UTI, but guess what? It's going to come right back. So what's the solution here? The article goes on to say that most urinary tract infections are caused by a type of a bacteria called E. coli, or Escherichia coli, if you want the long version. That's a bacteria from the intestines that somehow or another it gets into the urinary tract. To understand why, well, you know what, here's the deal. You can't really separate your liver from your gallbladder. You cannot separate your kidneys from your urinary tract. And you sure cannot separate what goes on within your colon from your bloodstream and your kidneys. Always think of it this way, and I'm just trying to oversimplify it. Whatever's in your gut is going to come out through your kidneys. And so if you have nothing but really, really good beneficial bacteria living in your gut, your kidneys are going to say, we are so happy. Thanks for not burdening us with too much stress. We don't have to filter out too much toxic waste. That's one of the reasons why constipation is so devastatingly bad for a human being, because if you don't get rid of the waste in a timely and efficient manner, guess what happens? You're asking your kidneys to do all the cleanup, because that waste leaks right through the gut and gets in the bloodstreaming into your bloodstream. And what did the kidneys do? Well, it's their job to filter out toxins. And do they do a good job of it? Oh my goodness, yeah. But even the kidneys, they can become exhausted and worn out over time, right? Yeah, absolutely. Oh, what would you do if you had an extremely dirty air filter on your car or your pickup? Well, you'd probably say, well, you know what? It's about time that I replaced it, because my check engine light's coming up, the engine's running rough. And all it is you just need to let your engine breathe oxygen and air so it can make energy for your vehicle, without having to go through 20,000 dragonflies, bumblebees, grasshoppers, crickets, and whatever dirt and debris is just stuck in the air filter. Well, the kidneys are going to get to the point where they just don't like working so hard anymore. One of the ways that I know the kidneys are weak is you become exhausted around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Anyway, so yes, we can take a sample of urine with a woman with a urinary tract infection, and we can grow it and find out, oh, I see what the problem is. She's got an overgrowth of E. coli. So in order to understand why some women get infection after infection after infection, and others don't get any at all, Dr. Hultgren teamed up with the Broad Institute scientist by the name of Ashley Earle, Ph.D., and the senior group leader for Bacterial Genomics Group at the board. I'm telling you, they got some names, don't they? Anyway, they wanted to find out. Here's their study right here. And I think this was an observational study. Okay. The researchers studied 15 women that had histories of urinary tract infections over and over and over again. So they were recurrent. And they also studied 16 women without. All the participants provided urine and blood samples at the start of the study and monthly stool samples. The team analyzed the bacterial composition in the stool samples and tested for urine and the presence of bacteria. They even measured the gene expression. So what's the difference of the samples of the urine and the stool from women that got one infection over and over again and those that never got infections? Well, the difference between the women who got repeated UTIs and those who didn't, surprisingly, it didn't come down to what kind of E. coli in their intestines or even the presence of E. coli in their bladders. Both groups carried E. coli strains in their guts capable of causing urinary tract infections. And such strains occasionally spread to their bladders. But that's not the difference. The real difference was in the makeup of their gut microbiomes. And that's going to be all the differing types of bacteria that live in your body, all the unique colonies of individual strains of bacteria. So patients with repeat infections, they showed a decreased diversity of healthy gut microbial species, which could provide more opportunities for disease-causing species to gain a foothold and to multiply. So, I don't know if you get this or not, but let me use an analogy. Let's say you live in a really, really nice neighborhood. There's 300 homes in your subdivision. You like all your neighbors. But what happens if some of those neighbors are very elderly and they just pass away? And the homes are sold to neighbors that are maybe not so nice. I'll let you determine what that means instead of me spelling it out for you. But what do you do if your neighborhood goes from 300 super, super nice families to all of a sudden you only have 150 really good families, and you have another 150 families where they play music super, super loud to where your pictures shake on your wall, and that's kind of annoying. Or they don't ever clean their yards. Or they have a bunch of wild animals roaming for, you just fill in the blank, whatever you would call a bad neighbor. But basically, a bad neighbor is somebody that makes the neighborhood worse. Good neighbors, they make the world a better place. So that's it. So if you get continual infections, you've got to beg the question, well, what do I do to increase the numbers of good neighbors or good bacteria that live inside of me? Notably, here's what they noticed. Women, the microbiomes of women that had recurrent UTIs that had scarce levels of bacteria that produced butyrate, that's a short-chain fatty acid with anti-inflammatory effects. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I got to turn my radio down.
Yeah, you're doing great.
I'm doing great, thank you. Can I ask you a question about something that's really bothering me?
Absolutely.
My right hand is going numb all the time when I'm trying to put on my makeup every day, and it goes without feeling. Is that lack of circulation? What causes that?
Well, have you ever crossed your legs in church before and then it's time to stand up for the closing prayer or something like that? You notice that your leg's asleep?
Yes.
Well, how long does it take for your feeling to come back?
It takes, in my leg, okay, not very long at all. I'll just get up and walk.
Is that what happens to your hand?
No, it won't come back for... All the time I'm putting my makeup on, it's numb and it starts hurting, and it does it every single day.
Okay.
Am I not having good circulation?
Well, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. And here's the example I was going to give you. If you cross your legs, most likely what's happening is you're cutting off what's called venous circulation. That's the blood that's going back to the heart. And so if you stand up after having your leg fall asleep and you move it around, well, a few minutes later you have all the feeling back. It doesn't feel weird anymore, right?
Okay.
But
yeah, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, but with your hand, if you're elevating your right hand to put makeup on, yeah, then I've got to say, I wonder if there's something going on either with the neck or the shoulder or the chest or the elbow, something like that.
Okay.
There's a condition called carpal tunnel syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
If you tell me that your hand from the wrist down begins to burn and tingle and go numb while you're asleep, then I would say maybe that's carpal tunnel. Is that what happens?
Yes.
Okay, so...
It does, because I don't realize it's gone to sleep. It's like it's gone to sleep until I start trying to put makeup on, and then I can't hardly hold the brush.
Oh,
it
dear.
You
know what I remember? There was a famous osteopathic physician, and I always like osteopaths. I like the way they think. But he was out of Chicago, Illinois.
Yes.
And he took all these people that had carpal tunnel syndrome, and he said, okay, you have a choice here. You can get the surgery, or you cannot get the surgery, but if you don't get the surgery, I want you to do these exercises and stretches. And I want to say that in this study, he gave them what's called vitamin B6.
Okay.
One form of B6 that usually works pretty well, it's called pyridoxal 5 phosphate. I know that's so it's called
P-A-R pyridoxal.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just called P5P for short.
P-P.
Mm-hmm. P5P.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Just capital P, the numeral 5, and then another capital P.
Okay, thank you.
And so in this study, he showed that about 30 to maybe 40%, I may have got that wrong, it doesn't really matter though because I'm pretty close, that these women that had numbness of their hands, that they had a deficiency of vitamin B6. And so you realize you got nothing to lose by taking a little bit of B6. And part of me finds so much of this just quite interesting on how the body works. So if you start taking 100 milligrams of vitamin B6, you could find out pretty quick in short order if your body is liking it, because I want the numbness of your hand to go away where you can resume gripping your mascara applying device. What's it called?
Writing a letter by hand or doing anything with it, it goes numb. And I used to drive with my son-in-law when we'd go on a trip with my daughter. His would go numb, and he'd start shaking it, and I knew exactly what it was feeling like.
Yeah, he's trying to get the blood flow back to it.
Yeah, well, and is that how you do it? Just shake it?
Well, and see, that's where I was going to go next. This is probably the simplest way I can get you to where you need to be. There's a website called YouTube. If you go on to YouTube, you can type in, what are the best stretches and exercises for carpal tunnel syndrome? Okay. Or for hand numbness?
Okay.
Now, I try hard not to talk about myself, but I know a little bit about this because I have had the most annoying numbness and hand going to sleep that probably what I've experienced exactly what you're doing, but maybe even more annoying. I don't know. When I was 2 years old, I ran through a glass door. I think my mother had just cleaned it. She probably used vinegar. She wasn't the type to use Fabuloso or Windex. So I ran straight through this glass door because my dad was pulling up in the driveway, and I ripped my wrist to shreds. If you can, you can't see the big scar on my wrist right now, can you? It's because it's radio.
I'm getting the picture, but not quite.
Well, if you meet me in person, you'll see my wrist has been ripped open, and I've got a long scar through there. But anyway, my point is that it was because of an issue in my wrist that I didn't have feeling in my hands. And so you can't really tell by looking at it now. I can do just about anything that I want. I don't have exactly the same feeling. And I know this is going to sound weird what I'm fixing to tell you, but I came across a book at Half Price Books. This is probably like in the early 90s, as in the 1990s. And in this book, they were talking about using healing clay. And clay can be anything from volcanic ash to kaolin clay to bentonite clay. Some people call it calcium bentonite clay. And so I said to myself, I've tried everything that I can to get my hand to stop acting up. It goes, I mean, you know what that's like to wake up in the middle of the night and you can't even feel your hand. It's just weird.
Yes.
And so I tried that remedy, and after two applications, I have had no numbness and zero pain since. So I don't know that I can really explain it scientifically to you, but all I did was I took some Indian healing clay, and I may have used apple cider vinegar to make my mud pack, but I just smeared mud all over my wrist. And my hand pain has been no more.
Wow.
I know that doesn't sound real scientific or great, but it's cheap and it's easy. You got nothing to lose. And so if you start taking vitamin B6, if you go onto YouTube and you start practicing or imitating the stretches and the exercises for your hand and arm and wrist, and then do mud, tell me if you're better all of a sudden.
Okay, great.
Do you have a husband that can massage and rub your hands and your wrist for you?
No, I'm widowed, thank you.
Oh, well, okay. Is there anybody else that you are close to that would be willing to tackle massaging your arms and shoulders and hands to see if they could work out some tension?
If I pay good money and go to a massage therapist, I can do that.
I think that would probably be a good call and say, could you just focus on this right hand? Is that the one that's giving you trouble?
Yes.
Okay, mine was the left. But if you went to a massage therapist, say, tell me what you find. And it may be very simple. It may be there is a swollen, ropey, knotted, inflamed muscle that's pinching the nerve that's going to your hand. And that's a strong possibility. And it could be at the shoulder, it could be at the neck, it could be at the elbow, or it could be at the wrist or the palm. So, yeah, I think that'd be a good investment just to focus on those things. Now, if I hear a woman crying out in pain from Tyler, I'm going to know it's you at a massage therapist.
I don't like deep tissue massages.
Well,
but then, take it. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? It may be such a good learning proposition, but you don't know what you may find, and they may discover that the problem is really right there at your elbow.
Oh, okay.
So that median nerve that crosses the wrist, it may be being pinched significantly by an elbow muscle.
Well, I'd sure rather do that than try to get surgery for it.
Absolutely, yes. And what I was going to say about that doctor, I think his success rate was like 97% at preventing carpal tunnel surgery. And I thought to myself, if there was a drug that had 97% effectiveness, then they would have it on every billboard in America.
Yeah.
There would be miniature, elaborate movies on TV right now about the effectiveness of the drug at treating carpal tunnel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So at least you got those things to work on right there, right?
Thank you. Am I allowed one more question?
Well, you are, yes.
Just me? Okay. When we had a study with you recently about iodine on the arm to see if you're iodine deficient.
Yeah, it's just a screening test where you paint some 2% iodine on and see how long it takes before it disappears.
Okay. Well, what was when the iodine stayed more than 4 or 5 hours?
Well, if the iodine is still on there, like when you paint it on, can I just use the forearm as an example? If you take that little bitty wand, it's the type of iodine that you would use to sterilize, or if you hit like a bad scraper, in your case, like if a pack of wolves bit you and you want to make sure you didn't get rabies, you might paint the iodine on there.
Okay.
But if the iodine is still there 24 hours later, most likely you're not deficient in iodine.
Okay.
But if it starts, the sooner that it goes away, that usually correlates to the more deficient that a woman is in iodine.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so if you paint.
I can't remember what to go buy to take to fix my deficiency in iodine. What vitamin is it?
Well, it's called iodine. But historically, somebody will either use what's called Lugol solution that's been used for over 100 years. I think the French came up with that one. I think the only inventions from France that are really good are their French bread, their red wine, and their Lugol solution. That's about it. No, I'm joking.
I can take something from the health food store called Lugol.
Yeah, there's either Lugol solution. There's a form of iodine called nanescent. That's kind of like kind of wordy. I usually use what's called prolamine iodine.
Okay.
But then again, let me say it a different way. When you eat deep, cold water ocean fish, you're getting iodine.
Okay.
And so if you've got to put some good, high-quality fuel in your body that makes you feel good, maybe some seafood would be in order a couple times a week.
That would be great.
You know, I've kind of experimented with myself. I've tried making my own chicken salad for lunch and then tuna fish salad. I think I've proven to myself I feel better when I have tuna fish salad over chicken salad.
Oh, really? I always do chicken salad. I'll try tuna. Is there any other kind of fish besides tuna?
I live
on the lake, and I don't think catfish are that good for you. They're not good fish.
I totally approve of deep-fried catfish over and over again.
Deep fried?
I'm joking. I'm sorry. Yeah, there's a bunch of fish out there. So besides tuna, you've got everything from sardines to salmon to flounder, halibut, cod. I like haddock. I think haddock tastes really good.
Is it at the grocery store?
It is. Yeah, in the frozen food section. So when they have these large fishing vessels on the Arctic Ocean, they process everything right there on the boat and flash freeze it. But usually what you'll look for on the label is it'll say wild caught. Man, I noticed yesterday? I was at the grocery store and I was looking at different canned fish for sale.
Uh-huh.
I saw cans of salmon that were going for $5.49 a can. And I thought to myself, I do not remember the last time I saw a canned salmon go for $5.49. So evidently the inflation has taken hold of the salmon industry.
You never know what's next.
Well, I think we can guess. So get ready, right?
What should I be stocking up on?
Well, canned fish would be one of the things that would be a very, very good choice because, number one, it has a long shelf life. And it's going to be one of those proteins that makes you feel really, really good, and it has everything that you need to have radiant health. So if you stocked up on some fish, that would not be a bad call. And in your case, since you live on the lake, maybe you should start putting some bacon on a string to see if you can pull up some crawfish.
I don't think I like crawfish, but I like most fish.
Okay.
What about bass? Are they good for you? Bass
well, you know which is my personal favorite? If you gave me one fish to eat from the lake, it would have to be crappie.
Okay.
Do you like crappie?
I'm going to try to catch some. I don't think I've had a crappie.
Now, let me know what you think, but you might even use butter, salt, pepper, and lots of lemon juice, and tell me if you love it.
Okay. That sounds good.
Yeah, it's one of the best-tasting fish of all time. Now, if you lived up north, like in Minnesota, I keep hearing stories that walleye is the most delicious freshwater fish of all time. But since I'm not out on the ice fishing today, I can't really confirm that.
Well, I'm sorry you can't get up there.
I know. I actually have my kayak ready to go. It's covered with Alaskan seal skin. I'm ready to take my harpoon and go out and see what I can come back with.
I would be thinking that would be a good trip for you.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Dr.
Yes,
Martin.
Thanks for your phone call.
You
Happy Mother's
Appreciate
Day.
It. Thank you. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. We'll just get you right in. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have a couple of questions. One is, you were talking about your gut bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
How... if you have an issue with that and you have an extended period of fasting, how does it help eliminating bad bacteria, or does it or not?
Well, for example, one of the strategies of trying to encourage the toxic forms of bacteria or maybe even parasites or yeast or fungus or toxic viruses to leave is you got to starve them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where maybe intermittent fasting could come in and play just a really, really beneficial role in helping to clear out the toxic germs. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if I see a person with horrible, horrible infections, it's easy to start recommending kind of a ketogenic type diet. Because mm-hmm. what you can do is you can combine that with intermittent fasting. And what happens is you start clearing out all the bugs and debris that just hadn't been able to be shaken or moved. And the thing of it is, the number one predictor of all time, if there's going to be toxic germs, is going to be the amount of sugar consumption in the diet. And so sugars don't just have to come from eating donuts. They can come from stuff like breadsticks and noodles and pasta and just lots and lots of carbohydrates.
Uh-huh.
And so if somebody struggles with low-grade infections all the time that generate inflammation, well, this is a good good point. I like your position on fasting.
Mm-hmm. Another within the subject, what's your thoughts on coffee enemas? You mentioned something in the past.
There's a lot of ways to label a coffee retention enema, but usually the way that I'm trying to suggest it is somebody has a condition called cancer.
Mm-hmm.
When the immune system starts to break down a tumor or cancer cells, it usually leaves this massive toxic debris field. And so a coffee enema is one of the ways that you can help assist your body at help purging all the toxic waste from your body from the broken down cancer cells so mm-hmm. it can leave the body. If it doesn't leave the body, you got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so a coffee retention enema is one of the best strategies of all time to help assist your detoxification.
So you do only like... some people have suggested doing that while you're fasting to clean.
I have no problem with that whatsoever. Every person is a unique individual, and they have to kind of experiment a little bit. But I think it's a good idea. I think it's something that's so inexpensive and so easy to do. You just have to wrap your mind around it and kind of adjust your attitude and say, okay, what's at play here? And when you start thinking about, you know what, I need to be healthy. I do not need to be sick. Or the other way that we could say it in the year 2022, I can't afford to be sick.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. So a coffee retention enema is one of the ways that you help purge all the toxic debris from your body.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, one of the books that's been written recently, and I'm so sorry I don't have the exact title in my brain, they looked at 30 people that had terminal cancer, and we're talking about a metastatic cancer, which those are particularly bad, and if you look at oncology's ability to cure a terminal cancer, they don't have a great track record. I think it's like about 2% at best. But these 30 individuals, what they had in common was they had been turned over to hospice, which means the doctor says, according to the labs and the blood work and your condition, you don't have long to live, and so we want hospice to take care of you. You're going to live somewhere between 1 day to maybe 6 days at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And these individuals, every single one of them in this book, they had spontaneous remission from cancer, which means the cancer went away and they healed. There was no evidence of it. Guess what they all had in common? They all started daily coffee retention enemas.
Hmm.
And so I know that I can go overboard on this, but I don't want to. I just want to state it basically. One of the greatest challenges that you and I are always going to have on this planet is detoxification. Yeah. How do we help assist the body in cleaning itself?
Yes. A few years back, a naturopathic lady told me that I had migraine headaches, and she encouraged me to do coffee enemas when I had it. And I believe that helped me get rid of them.
Well,
because when I do that, I no longer have the headache.
Well, can I ask, did you actually have, were you in the throes of a migraine headache when you would attempt the coffee enema?
When I saw you starting having it, yes.
Okay. Did you ever notice that the headache started to go away the moment you started the enema?
It has been quite a while, so I cannot assure that, but I do remember that that's what I did to get rid of them.
Well, I know that coffee contains a substance called cholinergic acid, and cholinergic acid, it helps open up the liver, if I can kind of say it loosely that way, where you can start to purge toxins from the bloodstream.
Correct.
So that's interesting. I like you. I'm glad you told me that. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. It's a completely different subject. When you were told your lymphatic is a little congested,
mm-hmm.
I do know that using a mini trampoline is helpful. Do you know of anything else that is good for that? And how can you tell physically? Like, do you have, knots? No, I can say the word.
The word knots would probably refer to swollen lymph nodes or congestion in your muscles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But like for most people, they could just probably look at the top of their feet or their ankles or their legs. And if they have a little bit of pitting edema or there's some fluid retention, that's going to be a sign that your lymphatic system is kind of clogged up.
Okay. I found a knot under my armpit,
mm-hmm.
and it's painful. And I was in my chiropractor has said that my lymphatic was a little congested. I do use a mini trampoline almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, what else can I do to get rid of it? And then I was wondering if this knot has to do with the lymphatic or something else.
Well, and it probably has something to do with the lymphatic. So let's just say, for example, I'm making an assumption here. I don't know that I'm right, but let's just say that you have a very swollen, inflamed lymph node. Is that okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay, that swollen lymph node in your armpit. The lymph node is like the meeting place of the immune system where it says, okay, this is the command and control. Let's take this toxic stuff over here and let's figure out what to do with it. So, you know, just like you have an air filter on your car to remove dragonflies and dirt, and you have an oil filter on your engine, hopefully it pulls off small flakes of metal that if it didn't do that, it would probably harm or wear out your engine prematurely. So filters are really, really important, and that's what the lymphatic system is. The other thing that your lymphatic system is, it's like a boatload of detergent. So if you had clothes, do you have a husband?
Yes.
He probably smells really, really bad after working in the yard all day, doesn't he? No, I'm just joking. So if he had all this dirt and sweat and debris in his blue jeans and clothing and T-shirt, well, it's kind of hard to scrub all that stuff out unless you have a binding agent. That's what the detergent is. So you've got the solvent, which is water. and you've got your detergent, which is like, I don't know why I'm thinking of the name Tide. I'll just say Tide detergent. But what you do is after you wash him, you go, oh, great, he doesn't smell like gym socks anymore, like he's been sweating all day long. So you're able to dissolve and remove and kick out the toxic, dirty, dirty water. And so that's what your lymphatic system is. And so there's some things that definitely help the lymphatic system work better. Number one, it's hard not to recommend onions and garlic for every human being. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the studies in front of me, but I can tell you this. Usually when people are very generous at consuming onions and consuming garlic, they stay healthier a whole lot longer than people that don't. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh, by the way, we made a recipe of your garlic and honey, local honey.
Oh, was it hard to do?
Well, no, it just took me a few minutes peeling a bunch of organic garlic and
okay.
put in a jar of honey, and we have it here to wait for 30 days.
Then good work. Way to go. See, in 30 days, you're going to look at it and go, oh, my goodness, I could eat one of these every day. Or the other thing that you could do with that garlic, what if you had one day next week? I mean, God forbid, but if you had a day by 4 o'clock, you're going, I do not feel good. I feel like I'm coming down with something. I was around 25 people that were sick today. They came into this house, and I happened to be there. And now what do I do? Well, if you started consuming 2 or maybe 3 of those cloves of that raw fermented garlic, that's going to be such a huge bolstering of your immune system, which in my mind, that's really what you want to do. If you start to feel a little bit run down, then help your body. My other thing that I like so, so much, do you know what vitamin A is?
Yes, sir. Well,
okay, so if you took a carrot and you ran 2 carrots through a juicer with 1 lemon that's been peeled, now there is a tremendous boost for the immune system and for the lymphatic system right there. And if you're really, really bold, what would be even better is if you took a chunk of ginger root and you ran that through the juicer. Now that's going to create, that's going to pack a punch, baby. So when you drink that down, it's going to have a little bit of a bite to it, and you're going to go, oh, my goodness, that stuff is super, super spicy. But
ginger, carrots, and lemon.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And so the carrot is going to be your provitamin A or your beta carotene. The vitamin C is going to be one of the greatest solvents and cleansers of the immune system and the lymphatic system of all time. And ginger, that's one of the things that you've got to think of. If anybody's got a problem that won't go away, or if they've got an infection that their body just can't shake, you got to start thinking about consuming ginger. Ginger is absolutely one of the greatest drainage remedies of all time. So when you're trying to help your body help itself, you think about ginger. Can I go back to onions just for one brief second?
Sure, take
your
time.
Onions contain compounds called oligosaccharides, or sometimes they're called fructooligosaccharides. And so the term that's used, sometimes they call it prebiotics. It just means that what's in an onion, it helps encourage the growth of friendly bacteria. And so when you're wanting good germs to benefit and bless your body, that's where onions can come in handy, or things like artichokes, or like I said on the radio maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, the studies on eating avocados. I think I asked a guy this week, I said, do you like avocados? And man, you would think that his face was distorted in utter pain when I just mentioned the word avocado. I thought I'd nearly killed the guy. That means no, he don't like them. So, but if you do like avocados, oh my goodness, you're doing yourself a huge favor.
Yes, let me, I don't know if you know this or if you agree with it. We read somewhere that onions, you when you peel them, you cut them, you need to either cook right away or eat them right away. You cannot even keep them in a fridge, even if it's in some container, because they absorb all the what do you call it, toxins out of the air and bacteria and whatever. So when you have raw onions sitting around and then you eat it, supposedly now you're getting all that stuff. Have you heard that?
I have, but let me tell you the old school thought on that also. Before they had modern refrigeration, what do you think they did to preserve food to keep it fresh from developing into, say, food poisoning or ptomaine poisoning? So if you went to a family or a church picnic one day and they had potato salad and chicken salad Succotash. I just made that last one up. But they would add onions to it to preserve it, to keep it from going bad. So historically, when onions are included in any recipe before they had modern refrigeration, what that would do is that would prevent the food from developing food poisoning. Does that make sense?
Oh, great, because I love raw onions, especially the sweet onions.
Oh, but yeah.
It's like, whoa, you have to cut and eat the whole onion every time just because.
All I'm saying is I think you have a little bit of leeway there.
Okay.
I don't think you have to do it exactly that split second, but of course, if that's the way that you cook, if you just cut up the onions right there fresh on the spot and you put on your liver tacos. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had liver tacos?
I eat liver, but not liver tacos.
I tell you what, if you try a liver taco with onions, tomatoes, cucumbers, and hot sauce, you'll never go back.
I guess I'll have to try.
Oh, they're so good. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I took it up a few times. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you betcha. Thank you for your phone call, and have a happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. All right, there's the phone line once again open. Ready for action here, 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. I mean, I haven't been to one in a long time, but we used to have, like, family reunions where everybody would... Like Aunt Lola and Aunt Vernie would set out potato salad they probably made 3 days earlier. It was always, like, a little scary to me. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Morgan.
Hello. Good morning.
I have I know we don't have much time, but I have a problem with my bad cholesterol. They're telling me now it's 30 points above what it should be. And I eat really healthy, and I take a lot of supplements. I try so hard to take care of myself. What do you suggest?
Well, number one, bad cholesterol, it's not really cholesterol. It's called low-density lipoprotein. But it's even not cholesterol, but it's called cholesterol, so I get that. I'm not trying to argue that point.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's the LDL, that lipoprotein, is actually the largest sponge to absorb waste in your body.
Okay.
And so if it goes up, it could be for many reasons. Number one, it could be that you're not getting enough sunshine. There's a study that shows that if you're not outside enough, remember, you're a solar charged battery. And so when you put this LDL and cholesterol in the presence of ultraviolet radiation from the sun, your body converts it into vitamin D. So that's one possibility.
Yes, do not get out enough.
Well, that's just, it's only an idea I'm giving you.
The next
thing is, if your job requires you to mix chemicals and paints and you're around chemicals all day long, LDL always goes up when you're around chemicals.
Okay.
If somebody lived on an industrial farm and they're working out in the fields all day long where the crop dusters come over, study after study shows that their LDL always goes up. But the way that I think of it is this. LDL goes up when it's trying to soak up poison that you're around, so it's doing you a favor.
Yes.
And so there is a benefit to this. And the last thing is, if a person has an infection, it could be a chronic sinus infection. It could be even what I talked about in the program today, a woman that has a chronic urinary tract infection. Well, LDL goes up because it's trying to soak up the toxic waste from the bacteria to protect you from damage. That's why when you look at studies of children whose parents live on these large industrial commercial farms where they use lots of chemicals on the crops, they actually have the highest LDL of anybody they could ever measure. But once they move away from that environment and they're no longer around the pesticides, LDL becomes lower. Now, from the mineral kingdom, if you do not have enough zinc, you're going to be prone to LDL going up. And I know I'm oversimplifying this, but the largest gland in your hormone producing system is called the thyroid.
Yes.
And if the thyroid becomes a little bit depleted of zinc or a little bit sluggish, well, the normal consequence is your cholesterol goes up.
Okay.
So there's a different take on this. So instead of just saying, hey, let's just lower your cholesterol for the sake of doing it, what I would say is let's try to learn you and discover what's going on. I also know that, and just take what I'm saying with a grain of salt, but that the cholesterol, you got to have that to make testosterone. Now, you're a woman. You still need some testosterone. You don't need as much as probably what a man does, but you still need some. But LDL tends to become elevated when you're low in testosterone. And so for most men, they got to have a certain amount of ambition and drive and motivation to press on and to aim high and to do great work. And so when men are real low in testosterone, they just lose it. They're not even interested in being with their wives. And you're going, that's weird. But women also, in order to have a libido, and I just mean it in a normal, healthy way, yeah, you've got to have testosterone. And so zinc can play a role with all that. So when zinc is lower than what it should be, LDL tends to go up.
Okay.
And so the most common symptoms, according to surveys and studies, are craving sugar and craving salt when you're low in zinc.
Okay.
And of course, I understand what I'm saying. It's almost like a joke because what is the deal? Sugar is like the most addictive substance on earth.
Yes, yes. I barely take any. I just put honey in.
Oh, man, that's such a good choice. Yeah. Way to go.
Yeah.
And so the other thing that I could tell you, do you know what pomegranate juice is?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so let me break them down. The ones that are probably the best for helping to satisfy the body's needs for health. And if you can satisfy the body, LDL cholesterol goes lower. So I know you're not going to like what I'm saying, but I'm trying to be honest and tell you the truth. So you're just going to have to take it like a man, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Dark chocolate.
Oh.
I know. Calm down, young lady. You've got to do it. Now,
how
if
could you do that to me?
I know. It's almost intolerable the way that I force this upon people.
So I eat four large candy bars of the darkest chocolate I can buy in my fridge.
Ma'am, you are doing you're making the world a better place. Thank you for doing that. Now, okay. Do you know what green tea is?
Yes.
What would I have to do to talk you into drinking one cup of green tea a day, maybe two?
Well, for you, just simply ask. Yeah.
Then ask and it shall be given unto thee.
Yes.
Hey, you know what? I just figured it out. There's the rule that we should follow. Ask for it and you can get it, okay?
Right.
If it's reasonable, I mean. Now, pomegranate juice is also very, very good. I think there's a flavonoid compound that's found in cherries. It's really been shown to decrease inflammation in the body. So the less inflammation you have, the better the health of your gut microbiome. That's where you're going to have lower LDL. And so when I was talking about the thyroid a while ago, I've seen people that had horrible labs, and I just remember the only thing I gave them was like zinc and iodine because it was cheap and to the point, and they probably told me, hey, Dr. Morgan, no mucho dinero, por favor. I ain't got no money, so how can we do this cheaply? And I'm going, okay, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to force you against your will to eat some dark chocolate. You're going to drink two cups of green tea. You're going to take a shot of pomegranate juice and eat some cherries. And the bottom line is you got to have real food to make your body strong and radiant.
Right.
So those are some ideas right there.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, with the pomegranates, when they're in season, I get a couple of them and I open them up and put the seeds in baggies.
Oh,
in the freezer,
I love it.
And I just grab a handful, throw it on my cereal, my oatmeal.
Have you ever looked in the book of Leviticus in the Old Testament?
Yes.
Do you remember what was embroidered into the robe of
yes.
the high priest? Yeah, yes. How about that?
Pomegranate. Yeah,
I'm thinking.
God knows what he's doing.
I'm thinking there's a pretty good meaning behind all that. What do you think?
I agree. Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you, sir. You are so appreciated.
Oh, you're very welcome. I hope you have a great day, ma'am.
You too. God bless.
God bless you. Bye bye.
Bye.
Happy Mother's Day out there to all the women listening here at KBGS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.